Amazon Web Services.
Welcome to this special from Cloudonaut. Today I'm doing a recap of Andy Jassy's keynote from reInvent 2020 together with Michael. So we are both on the same show, Michael. I'm happy to do that.
Yeah, that's great, Andreas. So let's start. So I watched the keynote yesterday in the live stream. And what I'm interested in is your first impression. So what was the first impression of the keynote that you had, Andreas?
Yeah, so this year everything is different, right? So the last years we have been traveling to Las Vegas. This year the whole conference is virtual. It's over 3 weeks. And of course it's different than the years before. So in general, I found the keynote, it was a very solid keynote. It was crazy long. So 3 hours of keynote to watch it from your laptop I watched it on my phone. This is really a long time to stay focused. So I don't know. I think most people have Googled around and tweeted and stuff like that. So the focus is really hard to keep when you're not sitting in that room, in that dark room. But overall, the keynote, so it was solid, but it felt a little bit boring from my perspective. So it was not those giant, huge stages and everything. It was not that impressive then when you're on Las Vegas live. So when you compare it also to an Apple keynote this year, also the visuals or videos were not that astonishing. It was solid. It was a good presentation, of course, from Andy Jassy. But yeah, I think it was also a little bit boring. Maybe 3 hours is also a little bit long to to keep the excitement going. So I really liked the announcement. So there were a lot of announcements in that keynote. That was I liked a lot. So maybe that's my take on the keynote. What's your thoughts on it, Michael?
Yeah, so I think I agree with what you said. And I think the bottom line is that we will have like evolutionary improvement of everything, but it wasn't a revolution. So lots of improvements, tiny bits here and there, which is, I don't say that that's not important. So it's amazing because if you use AWS, like it gets better and better and better. And lots of the missing pieces were added, but it's not something that was spectacular kind of thing. So that was my impression. So Andreas, why not let us start going through the announcements? And we have a couple of details that we researched that we can add here and there to the announcements besides just summarizing them. So let's start with that. Or do you have anything else to add before we go through the announcements?
Yeah. So no, I want to start with, at the beginning of his keynotes, Andy Jassy usually talks about numbers, the growth and everything. So I really wanted to start with that. And I have a funny side note. So this is a story from Las Vegas. So I was finally in the same elevator than Andy Jassy, but I didn't realize it before he went out. So I had no chance for an elevator pitch. So this is my story from reInvent and Andy Jassy. But yeah, besides that, so Andy Jassy started with, I think, two important numbers. So the first one is the revenue for the AWS business. So they're doing $40 billion right now or November 2020. So roughly that's a 30% year-over-year growth compared to last year. And I always like those charts. So I've heard a podcast recently and they call those the Bezos charts. So those are charts without any access where you don't really know about the numbers. They just show you it's growing. That's basically the message. So yeah, that's funny, but I think that's still interesting. Also, Andy Jassy showed a slide where he said that they expect that cloud is only 4% of the IT market, of the IT spend, of the global IT spend. So there is a lot more probably to come in the next years or even decades when moving from on-premises to cloud environments. So I thought that was an interesting number as well. Anything else from that first introduction block, Michael, that you want to highlight?
No, I think like there was also this kind of story that Andy presented about what are the key capabilities that you need to reinvent your organization. And that's more kind of the business language. I mean, what do you need? So for example, you need the leadership will to reinvent and invent. You need talent that's hungry to invent and stuff like this. I mean, it's always interesting to listen, but I don't think that you can do much with this information. But yeah, so that was kind of the setting. So they kind of let us know how the business is going and how they think that you should kind of use the cloud, like in a very like general way with these goals or key capabilities that you need to do it. So yeah, that's always interesting. And what I also liked is that there was not these boring presentations of customers that they kind of add everywhere. And so the customer presentations were actually quite short this time, and it was okay to listen to them. I mean, you could grab something to eat in between or something like this. So that was cool, I think, better than at Las Vegas, where they have like 50 minutes someone talking about something that no one is interested in, and you can't leave because you are squeezed into this little chairs. So yeah, that is actually a better experience than at Las Vegas. Okay, Andreas, so let's dive into the announcements. So I can start. So I have to look at my notes here a little bit. So the first service where improvements were announced is the EC2 service. So we have new instance types, and basically it is about machine learning optimized instance types. So there will be, and this is all an announcement for the future, it will be available next year. So there will be Habana Gaudi-based EC2 instances, and that seems to be provided by Intel. So they still do have a good relationship with Intel. Even so, they also announced their own ML chip, the AWS, it's called Trainium. So it's basically an AWS-developed chip to do the same thing. It basically, the message here is that with those chips, you can lower your costs for inference, so when you make actual predictions based on your models.
So yeah, So Michael, I think of that. So is that probably comparable to what Apple is doing? They have on their chips, the M1 on their MacBooks now, they have those special areas where they do machine learning stuff, and they're optimized for those kinds of workloads. So I imagine that this is something similar, but only for your cloud servers, right?
Yeah, so I haven't looked into the details, but I guess it's something like this, yeah. So that's kind of it from the EC2 space. There's also this C6 GN instance type, but they just add new instance types and stuff like this, but there was nothing like revolutionary here. Let's talk about containers, Andreas, because I think there actually were a couple of announcements that are a little bit more interesting than just small improvements. So one area that AWS kind of expands into is that they now allow, and if I say now, it's not actually you can use it, it's in 2021, you can at some time maybe use it or not, if they ship it or not. It is also possible that it's kind of delayed. But the promise is that you will be able to run ECS and also AKS, what they call anywhere, which basically means on-premises on your own servers. And I looked a little bit into the details of how ECS anywhere works, and if I say I looked into the details, all I can do at the moment is read through the blog post, and there's no documentation there. There's nothing to try out, actually. So how it works is that you can actually run the ECS agent on your own hardware. So you could also run it on your laptop, probably. And this agent then connects to the ECS control plane. And the way the authentication and stuff works is they rely on SSM managed instances. And there's this feature called an activation. So you basically add it's like a secret onto the machine for activation. And then it reaches out to SSM and activates this machine. And then you get kind of a proven identity that this is really the machine that it claims to be. And with this mechanism, you also then get access to, for example, IAM roles. So the tasks that run on your own machine managed or orchestrated by ECS will have an IAM role, so it works like any other ECS task. So that's what I like. But then I think the problems start. So I don't understand how the whole networking thing is going to work. So what is about security groups? I mean, they cannot really define security groups because, I mean, this is not a VPC, right? And I also don't understand how the whole load balancer stuff is going to work.
Yeah, the load balancer, in theory, you can have a target on premises from your load balancer. That should work, in theory. But yeah, interesting how they will do that. So I assume that you will not have security groups. But yeah, you can register a machine running on premises at the load balancer. That should work. Of course, you have to do all the networking setup underneath. So That's maybe interesting. Also, it's interesting if you can use a load balancer in your on-premises data center or if you have to use an application load balancer. Yeah, that's interesting.
So that was exactly the direction I was thinking into. So because, I mean, it doesn't really make sense to route your traffic into the cloud and then back into your data center, right? Because the load balancer is in the cloud. And so I was thinking that maybe App Mesh comes into here. But I mean, we know that App Mesh is kind of, I mean, there's room for improvement. And I don't know if they can speed up and support it. Yeah. But maybe that's how the network is going to work. Yeah.
Maybe the whole motivation here is that you just have that on your checklist so that when someone comes in that argumentation, so do we do Kubernetes or do we do ECS, you can say, yeah, you can run it on premises if you want, if you really want to. So that, because that's one of the arguments why you cannot use or why you shouldn't use Kubernetes, or why you shouldn't use ECS and use Kubernetes instead, is that you can run that on-prem as well. And now that argument is more or less gone. Of course, it's not in every technical detail gone, but from a management point of view, you can say, we use ECS and we could do it on-prem as well. So maybe it's also kind of that feature. So just to have that on the checklist.
Yeah, I think you're reading my mind, Andreas. And I really had some, like, I was looking into Google Anthos, and that's kind of, like, Google was first here, so this is the way to run your Kubernetes, like, in the cloud and on-premises and do the hybrid thing and kinds of stuff. I don't know the details if it really works, but that's kind of the promise. And I think that's kind of the response to that now.
What I don't understand is, so, Ted, you have had a look into that. So what is the thing of EKS anywhere? So I understand it for ECS, and I think it's a... it's an interesting direction that they're going there, but I don't understand what AKS on-prem should do for me. So what's the selling point here? Do we have anything?
I don't know really what it is about, but it comes with this open source Kubernetes distribution. So basically AKS is now, or is not, every time if I say now in this video, it's always next year. Yeah. So nothing is available today. So they have their Kubernetes distribution that you can then use. So you have the same kind of flavor of Kubernetes. And I imagine that it reaches out to the, like, the control plane also runs on AWS. But that's, I'm not 100% sure if that's the case, but that would make sense, because otherwise you need the etcd stuff and things running in your data center as well. So that wouldn't make much sense. So my assumption is that it's also like the control plane, but I haven't looked at EKS anywhere in detail. I just checked out the ECS one. So I cannot provide you the details here, sorry. Last but not least, Andreas' announcement in the container space is we finally have an alternative for Docker Hub. It's called ECR Public. And they kind of listen to your like thoughts, Andreas. It is like two different flavors of repositories. There are private one and public one. So you cannot accidentally make a private one public. You cannot even change it. So once it is public, it's public forever. Once it's private, it stays private. So yeah, we will see. I mean, at the moment, there are maybe 100 images in there. So it's, yeah, it definitely needs some time and people publish stuff into this registry. But It looks like an alternative to the Docker Hub with the rate limits that are very strict at the moment.
Yeah, and is it also providing a web interface to search through all that images that are published there?
Yeah, it provides a web interface and a search box, but I mean, there's room for improvement, but yeah, there's a way to look through the images.
But it's available right now.
Yes, it's available. It's up and running. You can have a look at it. And I just like scrolled through the images, and it's 5 pages at the moment. So I think you don't can scroll through Docker Hub, but you can at the moment scroll through ECR Public.
Okay, cool. So maybe search is not needed at the moment. Of course, I can just go over the list. Okay. Yeah. So maybe that. Okay. Yeah. So the next thing maybe is we have EC2, we have containers. Next is Lambda. So the smallest compute service, the smallest compute unit. So I think one announcement is quite interesting. So the Lambda are now built in 1 millisecond increments. It was 100 millisecond increments before. So that can be interesting because, yeah, you're not always paying the full 100 milliseconds that just started. So it should, in theory, reduce the costs for the Lambda execution times. Depending on what you're doing, this, I don't know if that really has that much of an effect, but it definitely has an effect on your AWS bill. So that's kindly appreciated. No big revolution, but okay, it's a fine thing. I don't know if that's that too important, but good to have that. But there's more with Lambda. So Michael, what about that?
Yeah, so and that's one of the announcements that I again picked to look a little bit deeper into, and that's the container support for Lambda functions. And I think there was like for years, like people discussed if that's a good idea or not, and I have no opinion. So I don't really understand why it's needed, but I mean, if you have good reasons, then that sounds promising. The problem is that it might sound a little bit too promising. So my first impression was, okay, cool, I can now spin up a container in Lambda. But no, that's not the case. So what you have to do is you can bring whatever image you like, but you have to implement the Lambda runtime API. Otherwise, it's not going to work. If you have an application that listens on a port, for example, port 80 or something, and you kind of think that, okay, now you can spin it up in Lambda, no, that's not going to work. So what you need is, you need an application purpose-built to run against the Lambda runtime API, which basically is an HTTP API that AWS Lambda provides, so you can reach it from your container. And there are four endpoints. You can get the next event, you can report a success, you can report an error, and you can report a startup error, like if the whole thing crashes during startup. And AWS makes this a little bit easier. So they provide base images for a couple of languages. So I have to check the list. .NET, Ruby, Go, Node, Java, Python. But they basically implement this already for you. So you again hand over, or you kind of specify in the Docker file, okay, what's the node function that should be invoked? And I mean, honestly, what's the benefit here? I mean, I can do the same thing with just a node runtime. So I don't quite understand it, but I mean, you can bring additional dependencies maybe if you do some image stuff or some, I don't know, if you have complicated dependencies. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, Michael, what is interesting here is exactly what you said. So we had that problems many times before. If you have some binary libraries that you need to bring together or ship together with your Lambda function source code, it's maybe now easier to package and bundle that together into a container instead of all those tricks to package that in the zip file. And it was also hard to test locally before, so that's maybe a good point here. So I didn't expect it to work like that, like you have described it now. So basically, I have to implement interacting with that API for getting new events in and everything, and a lot can go wrong there. So that's what I fear a little bit. So because what happens if your process is not fetching the events properly from Lambda? So then probably everything bursts into flames. So I think that is, this needs to be handled with care. So it's probably not for everyone, but for specific use cases where it makes sense. The other thing that I can think of why it could be valuable to do use that Lambda container support. So if you really bring your own container, you do not depend on the execution environment that AWS provides anymore. So remember, they're sunsetting any Node.js or Python versions, and then you have to migrate your whole stuff to the new versions to keep it up and running. So maybe that is for example, if you're building stuff for an enterprise that should run on Lambda for, I don't know, 10 years without touching it ever again, that might be a good reason to do it as well, because then you can just bring your container, and as long as the API interface, the Lambda runtime API, does not change, you don't have to change your containers and your source code. Maybe that's a interesting thing.
The promise is you can now finally run your insecure applications on Lambda, or
you can run your insecure enterprise applications forever with Lambda. I don't know. It's also interesting because I always thought it is a good thing that they are sunsetting this insecure old runtime environments, because also it helps them to keep their whole infrastructure on a secure and modern level. I think that is actually a good thing to force customers to upgrade to those new versions. Let's see how that turns out in the future. Interesting.
Okay, Andreas, we spent a lot of time already discussing only the compute announcements, so let's switch to the storage chapter.
Maybe, Michael, there's one more thing, Michael. So you're skipping over that. So there's AWS Proton, and that looks interesting. So let me try to put it in my own words. So as far as I understood, what they're doing here is, many organizations, if they start their journey with cloud, and maybe they do some DevOps, HL stuff as well, and they change everything in their organization, or at least they try to do so. In many organizations, what they do is they build a platform team. And the idea is the platform team takes care of the the heavy lifting on top of AWS, so that application developers and developer teams have it. They have a easy way to ship their microservices to AWS. So they build stuff like the EKS cluster and have a way of a deployment pipeline that they provide for each team to ship their application, for example, or similar things. They do the infrastructure setup for the serverless application, and the developer team just brings in their source code. And I think that's the idea of Proton, is to find a way how those teams can interact with each other. So it's a technical solution for a people problem, I think. Because the platform team can now provide templates so that developer teams can use to deploy their applications. So I think of it as basically you do infrastructure as code on the platform team. You set everything up as it's intended to work in your organization from a network and security and everything perspective. And the developers have an API that they can use to deploy their applications based on the templates that your platform team provides. So you can do your customization there, and they can just use it out of the box. So the demo video on the marketing page says they can do it with a click of a button. I hope that there is more automation than clicking a button. So I hope that there is an API for that and a CI/CD pipeline that you can use instead. But yeah, that's I think, the idea. In practice, I see many organizations struggling a little bit with that approach, because the problem is, if you have a platform team, the platform team becomes something like your IT department, and you have a dependency to that, and then it gets hard to stay flexible and up to speed. So I don't think if that fits too well with the reinventing patterns that Andy Jassy described at the beginning, but I think it can be interesting for organizations that are on that path and want to at least automate that interface between the developer teams and the platform team.
Yeah, Andreas, I have the impression that you looked at this a little bit closer than I. So is it actually based on CloudFormation templates, or what's the template?
I'm not sure about that. So what I've seen is I've seen some tweets about that they plan to integrate it into CDK, but I don't know if that's, I don't know exactly. I assume that there is infrastructure as code behind it, but I don't know 100%.
On one of the screenshots, I saw code pipeline. So the pipeline seems to be implemented by code pipeline. But I was also interested in how it relates to service catalog, because that's kind of, I mean, it's not the same, but it's kind of similar. So, but that's maybe for the future. So, okay, so let's talk about storage. I think there's one announcement that you liked, Andreas. So let's talk about this a little bit.
Yeah, so they announced a new EBS volume type, the general purpose 3 volume type, GP3. So the promise is it's 20% cheaper, you get 4 times the maximum throughput of IOPS per storage, and it's available today. So I created my first volume based on GP3 already. And then I tried to find out a little bit about the technical details, and this wasn't that easy. So there's a very small blog post about all of that, so not too much information in there. The documentation is not... There is some documentation, but it doesn't really go into detail. So let me summarize what we know. So with GP3, you get a baseline performance of 3,000 IOPS and 125 megabit per second throughput. And so that's what you get for each volume that you create. And if you want to have more, so if you have to increase the throughput, you can increase the throughput to up to 16,000 IOPS and 1,000 megabit per second. But then you pay for that throughput. So you have to configure that. And that's something you do over the API. So you can turn it on, turn it off. It's not scaling automatically or anything. And that's the way it works. It's different than the general purpose 2, the previous version, because there we had that bursting capability. So I don't think that this is available with GP3, at least that's not mentioned in the documentation or anywhere. So I think you only have the baseline performance, and if you want more, you just start paying for that. So it behaves a little bit different. Actually, it behaves, in my opinion, what I've learned about it, it behaves very similar to the provisioned IOPS, so the IO2 volume types. So I'm not 100% sure yet of what's really the difference between GP3 and IO2, so the provision throughput mode. I did a cost comparison, so I tried to calculate the costs compared to GP3 and IO2. And what I found out is, so IO2 is a lot more expensive for it seems like the same throughput that you can get. So of course, IO2 scales up much higher, so you can have much higher throughput provisioned there. But if you do a similar configuration with both options, in my example, GPU3 costs less than half or even a third of what you pay with IO2. So I'm not yet 100% sure if there is a difference. Maybe the difference is, so that is with IO2, you have an SLA on achieving the throughput to your volumes. Maybe there is nothing like that for the GP3 ones. I don't know, but that's not mentioned anywhere. So let's see how this turns out in the future.
Okay, and also like the naming is then maybe not the best because, I mean, it's not really general purpose anymore, so it doesn't behave like the other ones. So yeah.
Maybe the general purpose part is that the baseline is sufficient for most applications. Maybe that's the general part of it. I don't know.
So there was another interesting announcement, and I like there were many, many use cases I stumbled upon in the past years where this could be helpful. And it's called, if I like the name also is a little bit kind of, I don't know how what kind of name it is, but it's called IoT Block Express Volume. And it actually is a SAN kind of storage. It provides up to 256,000 IOPS per second and a throughput of 4,000 megabits per second. And it's not available as the GP3, it's in preview. And the cool thing here is, and this was just announced as like this thing is in preview, and then there was another thing announced that might be coming in the future, and it's called multi-attach. So that could actually solve the big pain of many enterprises where they need one volume attached to many nodes that is not as slow as EFS. So I'm looking forward to that. So that could really be a big change for some workloads where they exchange data over the storage, basically.
Okay, so I'm not sure about that. So the multi-attach, doesn't it sound more like attaching the same EBS volume to multiple machines, and then you have to make sure that only one of them writes to the volume? Probably that's more like that, or?
Yeah, but the question is, does it only work in a single ASAT as today for some EBS volume? I mean, you can already have a EBS volume attached to multiple instances, many limitations, instance type of stuff. But I don't know if this will work across zones, for example. And if, then that could be interesting. And again, if you write to the same file, yes, it will kind of blow up. That's correct.
Yeah, next topic, the databases. So the first thing that was announced there is Aurora Serverless version 2, because version 1 did not work. So that's my personal summary of it. So we reviewed Aurora Serverless. I think it was last year or the year before. There's a blog post about it. You will find a link to that in the description here. So Aurora Serverless was missing the following features. So it did not support multi-ASAT. So you had only one instance in a single availability zone. So this was also why you didn't have any SLAs on Aurora Serverless before. It didn't support read replicas. And also it did not support databases spanning multiple regions. And basically with Aurora Serverless version 2, AWS promises to fix all those problems. So basically what they say is there will be Aurora Serverless version 2. The preview for MySQL is available already, and Postgres will be available next year as a preview. So let's see when general availability is coming around. But yeah, they promise to fix all the problems that we had with Aurora Serverless version 1. So I think that's a good thing. And I'm looking forward to that, because overall, I think that would be a really killer feature if Aurora Serverless would really work and offer the same capabilities than Aurora and RDS offers in general. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, and I think one of the other big benefits is that it scales up much faster in smaller increments. So, and I hope this will also kind of get rid of this long, like if you scale down to zero, it takes like AWS promises that it spins up, and now they claim it like 5 to 50 seconds. And I mean, 50 seconds is, that's not a good idea if your application pauses for 50 seconds if the first user visits it. So I hope that will get better as well. And the only fear I have, so why do they name it version 2? I mean, why can they not just make my existing serverless cluster working better? So if I have to migrate, then I will be mad. So I'm really interested in how they will solve that. Because if it's really a version 2, then that wouldn't be a good like experience for users. But let's see. I mean, there's nothing announced how that works in.
my assumption is they've been going in the wrong direction. They're not able to fix that from an architectural point of view. They're now doing something completely different. And I think there will be probably migration paths. Probably you have to snapshot or something your database and have a short downtime. That's what I assume, but let's see how this turns out.
Okay, last but not least, in the database space, so there was one announcement, and I'm kind of suspicious of announcement like that. So it's basically a project called Babelfish, which tries to solve the problem of your existing application runs against the MySQL, against the Microsoft SQL Server, and this magic Babelfish project in between converts it into Postgres. So you can run your existing MS SQL applications against Postgres, and Babelfish does all the magic.
Don't believe them. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's always, if there's magic involved, then I'm suspicious. But let's see. It is, I don't know what it actually is. It's not really a service. It is announced to be an open source project in 2021. I don't know how it will look like in the beginning. What it is actually, is it something that you run on your EC2, or I don't know. Is it a library, or I don't know how it works. But yeah, so if you're interested in the magic for MS SQL, then that's interesting. Otherwise, I don't think that's a big thing.
Yeah, we call it computer science for a reason. So it's science, it's not magic. So you should keep it that way. Okay, so then there have been a lot of announcements about data and machine learning services. I'm not really into those, into that area. So they have some SageMaker improvements. They now have pipelines. They have things that help you to prepare your data sets. I don't understand enough about those things that I can really say if that's a good thing. They are doing something in that area. That's all I can say about it. Is there anything you would add to those services, Michael?
I mean, I have a couple of things to add. So first, there will be another keynote focused specifically on machine learning and this kind of topics. So I expect there's many, many more things to come here. So if you're interested in that space, check out this keynote. I think it's next week. I'm not 100% sure. I think it's Thursday, but I could be wrong. But it's next week. So the key announcements that I like kind of liked is the first is Clue Elastic Fuse. It's basically a way to get data from one data store into another and persist it there. So for example, if you like you have an Elasticsearch cluster where you have, I don't know, all your important data, and then you crunch it, for example, in the top 10, and then you put it into DynamoDB or something like that. So kind of a materialized view from one database into another one. And that's kind of what the service claims to do. Or claims to do in the future. It's in preview at the moment. So it reads from a source database, it does some aggregation, and then it puts it into a target database for like more efficient access. And it does all that automatically. So it's kind of a data chop kind of thing.
That sounds interesting, yeah. I'm looking forward to that. I missed that, actually. So I missed that part of the keynote, as it seems.
Yeah, so that's lots of stuff, and there's the possibility of missing something is very high, Andreas, so no problem. So another thing that I like, and I mean, it's really just an announcement, so no one knows how it works, but Amazon DevOps Guru, which basically is the magic, again, it's kind of magic. So it will detect problems upfront. So you run your workloads, then you receive an email in 10 minutes, you'll run into an issue if you don't do this, click this button, and then you click the button, and then the problem is gone before it appeared. So that's kind of the promise. I'm not sure how it's actually going to work, but if it works like this, then that could be crazy. And I definitely like to integrate this into Marbot, Andreas. So this could be great to send alerts to Marbot, our chatbot in Slack and Microsoft Teams. But I'm looking forward. I try to get into the preview. So I will see if I can get that done. And then I will check it out. So that is another thing here. And then we had QuickSight's Q. So QuickSight is the way to kind of define dashboards across your data in your AWS accounts. So can connect to all kinds of sources. And with QuickSight Q, you basically don't need to define the dashboard anymore. You can just ask a question. So for example, what we could ask QuickSight Q, Andreas, and that's what I'm going to try out if I get into the preview is, QuickSight, what's the most popular blog post of cloudonaut.io? And if it can answer this question, then it's really a great service. But I don't know if it is going to work. So it will just answer all kinds of questions by looking at the schema of your data and then provides the answer. I don't know if it works. But if it does, then that could be great.
Looking forward to that. Yeah, Michael. So then what was fascinating me is they had a really long section in their keynote talking about Amazon Connect. So Amazon Connect is their solution to build up a call center with all kinds of integrations with machine learning and automating stuff. So I found that quite interesting that they have that strong focus on that product, because I thought it's more of a niche, but it seems to be important to a lot of customers. So they dedicated a lot of time to that. So a lot of announcements to Amazon Connect within the last weeks and month already. So I observed that while scrolling through all the announcements from AWS, that there's a lot going on in the Amazon Connect space. But they had special announcements in the keynote. So you can have customer profiles, which basically is, I think it's integrates the contact center with your CRM tools, so that you know more about your customers, the purchases that they did, if they called in early and stuff like that. They have something now that is called Connect Real-Time Contact Lens. And basically the idea is, when a customer calls in and is very angry about your service or something like that, that's immediately detected. And the manager of the agents is informed about that, and he can or she can tune into that conversation, coach the agent, or also just transfer the call to the manager. So that's probably interesting if you do a call center. I've never done it before, so we're using Amazon Connect for the two of us, so we're not really running a call center, but that's interesting. And also they added more stuff like voice ID. So when someone calls in, Amazon Connect will find out if they talked to that person before based on their voice. So that could be interesting. And they have integrated what they call Connect Tasks. So basically you can think of it as a to-do list for the agents, what they have to work on after a call. So that sounds interesting. And what's fascinating to me is that had so much attention or so much space in the keynote. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. So this was really, Andy was talking, I think it was like maybe 50 minutes or longer about Connect. And the cool thing here is also that most of this stuff is general available, so you can use it, with the exceptions of Connect Voice ID, which is in preview. But so that's one of the services that actually delivers something on reInvent, which is also pretty cool. So you can try something out here. Yeah, what I find interesting is that AWS kind of broadened the hybrid term. So they defined, like, for me, hybrid is like running stuff in the data center and in the cloud. And then AWS says, okay, no, that's not all that hybrid is about. So hybrid is more. So hybrid is not only about running your stuff in your on-premises data center and in the cloud. It's also about maybe you run stuff in your stores. Like, there's now outposts, like very small outposts that fit like not like a whole rack of the size, but it's like a pizza box, like the way you bought a server, like before you went to the cloud, basically those kind of half inch or I don't know, kind of tall things that you just put into the stack, into the rack, and this is now what you get, an outpost. Like, it's very small, you can put it into stores or into your office or wherever you like. Then you can run EC2 and RDS and stuff like this on that. So that's one possibility. Then they expand the local zone stuff. So they add more zones all over the US. I think they're only in the US at the moment, but they add in many, many of the metropolitan areas, they add new zones. And last but not least, Wavelang. So this is the kind of the extension to the cloud that runs with the mobile carriers for the 5G use cases. So it's basically close to where the mobile phones connect to. So we can also run stuff. And this is kind of interesting, I think. Just they kind of, I don't know if they redefined the term hybrid, but for me, it was not obvious that this is also kind of hybrid, but it makes kind of sense. But it's all managed AWS stuff. So it's not your own data center. So this is all managed by AWS, the hardware. So that's kind of interesting. And then they also had some new ways. And I don't know if that also fits into this hybrid kind of topic or not, but they have like a new service, or I don't know if it's really a service, a new offering called Monitron, which helps you to get data, sensor data from your, from maybe your truck or maybe from the factory to AWS. Yeah.
What's interesting about that, I think, is they build up devices that you can use and they connect it with the cloud already. So I think they're really going to the edges, and they build devices that connect to the cloud over a network automatically, and that can send sensor data to AWS. So I think that is really valuable, because I've never done it before, but I assume that's a lot of work to do if you have to get everything up and running with such a connection to the internet from basically everywhere where those machines are deployed. So that sounds really interesting. I think the use cases Andy mentioned in the keynote is very limited. So the sensors and everything are, at least from my perspective, seem to be very limited. But I think that's a start. They will probably widen that products and that devices that you can buy a lot in the future. And I think that's a very interesting improvement here. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember temperature, humidity, and vibration. I don't know if there was another sensor, but yeah, that's kind of what they can provide you. So also we have this new service called Panorama Appliance. So I think it's kind of a way to, if you have like cameras for security purposes and looking at your, I don't know, entrance, for example. This is kind of a way to get this data. It's a device that you install on your site, and then it kind of plugs into the camera, and then it streams the data to the cloud, and it also does some kind of it has some built-in models, so maybe you can detect people, or I don't know if you can detect a dog or stuff like this. So, but yeah, it all makes it a little bit easier to interact with AWS. Yeah.
I think it's for those computer vision scenarios. I think it's not really for civilians. Probably it's more for, I don't know, you do quality control in a factory with a camera. You take a picture of every item that goes through your factory and try to find out if that is as expected. Stuff like that is probably what they are doing with those things here. Interesting. They are going into that direction as well. So basically they broaden their service ecosystem there as well. So that's what I probably is the takeaway here. Okay, Michael. So did we miss any important announcement, or are we ready for a summary of everything?
I think we are ready for the summary. I mean, we definitely missed something, but we picked also a little bit the important one. So yeah, let's do the summary, Andreas.
Okay, I think so. So my summary is, so again, as the years before, the keynote shows evolution instead of revolution. So when I remember the days where there was announcement of Lambda or something like that in the keynote, this was really a revolution of everything. And nowadays in those keynotes, we see evolution. So it's comparable to if you watch Apple doing a keynote about the iPhone. So the iPhone gets better every year, but really the improvements that are made over each year are not that significant anymore. And I think that's true for AWS as well. So they improve, there's an evolution going on, and they get better and better. They're broadening their service ecosystem. But I think it's no surprises, really. There was nothing really that really surprised me about that keynote. I find it really cool that they still are able to ship new important features, that they cover important areas, that they iterate based on customer feedback. I think that's what you can see when you look over all those announcements, and they're doing a great job there. That's what I like. Also, what I noticed when watching the keynote, there's no longer such a strong focus on enterprise, enterprise, enterprise. So the years before, sometimes I felt a little bit they are only now focusing on enterprise customers. This keynote seemed like they really have everyone in mind. So from a small startup to big enterprise customers and everything in between. So that's what I like. I think what stick to my mind is that QuickSight and Connect, those two services seem to make a lot of progress, and they had a lot of time in the keynote, and I think that's remarkable. I didn't expect that, maybe. So that's what I observed. And of course, I'm happy about all those announcements in the container and serverless world. So what about you? What's your summary, Michael?
Yeah, so I agree with your summary. So I hope that Werner is not the enterprise guy this year, so that he talks about all this enterprise stuff. Let's see. But yeah, I really like most of the announcements. So what I always don't like, but this is like the new way of how reInvent works. So like since a couple of years, they announce stuff that will be shipped next year. So there's not much to actually use at the moment. So we are now know what AWS is working on, but I mean, there's not much to actually use, which is, yeah, it's, I don't know, maybe other people's work differently, but I always are a little bit like, I like if I can try things out if they are announced, so. We now wait until next year to try out all this cool stuff. But definitely most of the improvements make a lot of sense to me. And I can agree with your summary that AWS makes things better every year. So that's it. Andreas, I think that's it. Anything else to say? Or
yes, there's one more thing. So if you have watched or listened to this special about the reInvent keynote of Andy Jassy in 2020, please send us your feedback, because we want to know about how you like that format, if there's something you want to improve, or if you just send us some up or some down. That would be very helpful for us to improve that in the future. So thank you very much, Michael, for going over the keynote together with me. I'm excited to what is coming in the next 3 weeks, because reInvent will be 3 weeks long. So this is quite a lot of time that we now will see new announcement and keynotes coming. So looking forward to that. So yeah, thanks for listening and for watching. And we will see you soon. Bye.